Studio 360.
For the second and third weeks of October 1966, the song that topped the charts was Reach Out, I'll Be There by the Four Tops. It is quintessential feel-good Motown. Soulful, poppy, big-hearted. I'll be there. But this very week in 1966, another song bumped I'll Be There out of number one. It was also recorded in Michigan, a bit north of Detroit, but this song could not be more different than I'll Be There. Instead of a shoulder to cry on, it promised, after a love gone wrong, that the ex was gonna regret it. Also had a very different, more basic sound, the first proto-stirrings of Detroit punk. For our next American Icon story, Pedro Rafael Rosado and Jocelyn Gonzalez have the story of 96 Tears by Question Mark and the Mysterians. That's an actual question mark in the front man's name. They were a group of Mexican-American teenagers who recorded the song that made America cry. Cry, cry, cry.
It's 1962, and three kids in Saginaw and Bay City fall hard for the fast-driving tunes of The Ventures and Duane Eddy.
So they get together to start their own band.
We were playing The Ventures and all kinds of instrumentals. We didn't sing. It was just totally instrumentals.
I'm Robert Lee Valderrama. I'm the founder of Question Mark and Mysterians and a guitar player.
My parents were migrant workers from Texas. And they would come up here in the summertime and work out in the fields. Then they got jobs at General Motors and found out what it was like to make better money. And then we bought a farm in Bay City, Michigan.
Valderrama dreamed of playing guitar when he first saw Les Paul on TV, but he never thought his family could afford one. Then one day, his dad brought home an acoustic that was a little banged up but still had strings. And Valderrama picked up a few lessons from his brother.
The trio he formed with friends Larry Borjas on drums and Robert Martinez on guitar played their surf rock homages at local festivals and dances. But people kept asking,
"Well, who sings in a band?" I go, "Oh, no, we don't sing in a band. We just play instrumentals." They said, "Well, you guys should get a singer." Robert said he knew a singer. It was his brother, Rudy Martinez. He sounded like Mick Jagger, and Rudy was a great dancer, so we hired him as our lead singer, front man.
Rudy went by the name Question Mark, and he always wore dark glasses. He already had that rock star magnetism, and he emerged as a creative force in the group. But Robert says there was another crucial element to the group's evolution.
That was the addition of Frank Rodriguez on keyboards, who'd been playing since he was a young child.
The Mysterium! The Mysterium! The Mysterium!
Now they needed a real name for the band, and they found one on Saturday morning TV.
We are the Mysterians.
The Mysterians was a 1957 Japanese sci-fi flick about humanoid aliens that arrive from Mars demanding land and Earth's women to breed new offspring. In early 1966, Question Mark and the Mysterians started to do some demos, and the lineup changed around to include Frank Lugo on bass and Eddie Serrato on drums.
One time we were practicing over at Frank Rodriguez's house, and I was first learning the power chord. I would play from G to C back and forth, playing it back. Frankie started playing the keys onto it, and our drummer, Eddie Serrato, and Frank started playing the bass and the keys, and Question Mark started singing to it, and he kept saying too many teardrops.
Question Mark has said that he already had this song going around in his head when the instrumentation took shape with the rest of the band.
The original title was Too Many Teardrops, and then sort of as sophomore humor among the boys, they're like, we should call it 69 Tears.
Rob St. Mary is the director of the Detroit Punk Archive and a longtime Michigan radio host and producer.
But then they also realized that they're like, well, if we do that, they won't put us on the radio with that. I mean, because this was, of course, a year or two before where the Rolling Stones had to change it from Let's Spend the Night Together to Let's Spend Some Time Together on Ed Sullivan. So this was still an era where you couldn't get away with that kind of stuff.
Changing the title to 96 Tears, the Mysterians' next move was to somehow get the song recorded and distributed.
I feel Lily Gonzalez gave us the opportunity to record and to take a chance on us.
Her one label was very centered on traditional sort of, you know, rancheros, Mexican music, sort of border music.
But Lily Gonzalez had another label called Pagogo, where she was releasing songs sung in English.
And they said, you know, we've got some songs and we've been playing this rock and roll music. And she's like, okay.
We recorded 96 Tears in Bay City, Michigan, a place called Shields Recording Studio. Art Shields was the owner. And it had a closet that he turned into the control room, where he had his four-track recorder in there.
This gentleman, since I guess sometime in the 50s, he was recording a lot of polkas, because there was a lot of Polish immigrants into Bay County and into the Thumb.
The Lower Peninsula of Michigan is shaped like a mitten, and the Thumb is generally central Michigan. It's the area north of Detroit.
These kids went in, and they ran through it about, I guess, 8 or 9 times until they got pretty much a perfect take, because there was no overdubbing or anything. And said, there you go, there's your acetate, there's your two sides, good luck. You have this catchy little couple note intro on the organ that gets you into the song. And it just chugs along.
"96 Tears" combines a number of musical threads running through rock and roll in the 1960s.
Before they were Question Mark and the Mysterians, they were also a surf rock band. Surf rock bands used a lot of steady eighth notes.
John Pareles is the chief pop critic of the New York Times.
The Batman theme was around in the mid-60s too, with repeated notes and major to minor chords. It was in the air. It just sounded better in 96 Tears.
And then there's the instrument delivering 96 Tears' famous hook. It's a Vox Continental organ, not a farfisa as many people think. It points towards the ethnic roots of the group because it sounds like an accordion.
Robert Balderrama's dad had played the instrument, and some of the Mysterians fans recognized that sound too.
Being Mexican-American and growing up with that accordion sound, that oompa oompa kind of thing that originated, I guess, from Germany and Poland that came to Mexico. But the feel of the song 96 Tears and what Question Mark does with it definitely calls back to that accordion interplay of chords and notes and close chromatic figures that you can hear sometimes in that music.
Well, to me, the beauty of 96 Tears is that this is America. In the late 19th century, you have German and Czech immigrants coming to Mexico to work, and they bring their accordions. The Mexicans love the sound of the accordion. They pick it up. They pick up the sound of the polka. They create norteño music, beloved in northern Mexico and southern Texas. The sound of that accordion translates very nicely onto a Vox Continental organ. That Vox Continental organ is played by some kids in Michigan. This is America.
When the records got pressed, Lily Gonzalez told us, she goes, what I want you to do is take the singles to the radio stations in the local area, see if you can get some airplay, and take the records to the record stores.
They must have had great door-to-door salesmanship, because 96 Tears started to pick up steam with local audiences.
Question Mark got a phone call from one of the DJs in Saginaw, that I think was WSAM. People started calling in, requesting our song, and then we got calls from the record stores that we sold out. We also took their single to Bob Dell in Flint, Michigan, WTAC, and we got calls from the record stores in Flint, sold out.
CKLW AM 800, also known as the Big 8, was based across the river in Windsor, Ontario. The station had a powerful AM signal that covered the Detroit area and reached cities as far away as Toledo and Cleveland in Ohio.
They eventually ended up on the Big 8, which was CKLW, based out of Windsor. They were a station that could take a regional single and break it nationally. They had that much pull. And then I'm gonna put you way down here.
And you'll start crying. 96 tears. Roberto Avant-Mir is a professor at University of Texas, El Paso, and author of Rock the Nation: Latino Identities and the Latin Rock Diaspora. He's been studying how Latin music, along with blues and country, influenced the sound of rock and roll.
Johnny Cash, Ring of Fire. I don't know if we can claim definitively that Ring of Fire is, like, you know, the first song to use mariachi-style trumpets in, like, a country song. I think it sounds to me like what I think Rancheras song sounds like, with the trumpets blasting.
Bound by wild desire. The 1963 hit Louie Louie by the Kingsmen shares some musical DNA with 96 Tears, but it was originally written and performed in 1955 by a black musician named Richard Berry, who based his composition on a Cuban tune called El Loco Cha-Cha.
As we get further into the late 50s and early 60s, it's not just Latino musical elements we're hearing in American rock. We're hearing Latino musicians.
This is a song that very overtly is a Latin song, and the whole song is in Spanish. You have this kid, Richie Valens, who's totally pretending that his name is Valens and his real name's not, you know, Richard Valenzuela. He's being played up as Richie Valens, right, to be more palatable to the mainstream. Wooly Bully by Sam the Sham and the Pharaohs. The first thing that got my attention from that song was that famous countdown, right? It does the one, two, tres, cuatro. And if you look at the album cover, right, it has this Mexican guy on the cover. Even though they're wearing these, like, Egyptian costumes and pretending they're Egyptian because they're the Pharaohs, Sam was not Sam, but a guy named Domingo Zamudio, right? A Mexican American from around Dallas, Texas, I believe. Mexican enough that he felt compelled to throw Spanish into a song that became hugely, widely popular. But at the same time, he's not Domingo Zamudio, he's Sam the Sham.
Avant-Mir says the racial politics of the time didn't allow for the Mexican musicians in the Mysterians and other bands to be open about their identity. And yet, they couldn't help but include markers of their culture in the music.
The Chicano movement, which means, you know, pride in your culture and activism and, you know, being proud of who you are, that doesn't happen until the late 60s, right? Late 60s, early 70s. Mexicans and Latinos are sort of caught up in this dominant notion of assimilation, trying to be as mainstream as you can be, trying to cover up your culture, right? Trying to change your name. There's this fear about being too ethnic, especially if you're going into popular music or movies or whatever popular culture. And I think that's definitely there in the 1960s.
Ralph Valdez is the executive director of the Dearborn Arts Council and a longtime radio jock in Michigan. The Mysterians' Latin background resonated with him when he heard the song as a kid.
I grew up at a time when there were a lot of different ethnicities in my neighborhood, but no one was encouraged to express it. Although we were proud of our culture, it was more of like something that you kept amongst your family and didn't celebrate as it is today. I think it would have been harder for them to make a hit out of a song that was more openly drawing from Hispanic roots. So I think they did it in a more clever way.
Even if the Mysterians weren't consciously thinking of their ethnicity in the presentation of the band, they certainly understood the value of having a distinct look. They dressed alike in cool paisley shirts with vests.
But most of their visual mystique came from Question Mark, their dynamic lead singer who never took off his shades.
Hey. Right. Yeah. I think a big part of Question Mark the Mysterians is Rudy Q. Question Mark. He's got a voice, kind of sexy, kind of Spanish, kind of cool.
Mary Cobra is the lead guitarist of the Detroit Cobras, a rock and soul band that's been around since the 90s.
He thinks he's from Mars, okay, so let's start with that. You know, he thinks himself as an alien, but he looks like a Mexican dude in spandex. And he does these, very flashy dance moves. He always wears his shades. You never see his eyes. He's really a mystery. He's like fabulous. Just like
you. Here's Question Mark in an interview for the show Rock and Roll High School. This is when the band appeared at New York's Coney Island High in the late 90s.
I created hip, in rock and roll, But I mean, okay, you had a few hundred entertainers that have been referred to me. And I'm going to say because they've been referred to me, James Brown, Prince, Michael Jackson.
To me, I see him as part of this tradition of Sun Ra. You have George Clinton that comes out of that. I think that in a way, his I'm from Outer Space and all of this stuff was a way to create a mythology around himself.
After 96 Tears became a hit in Detroit, Neil Bogart, a young VP at Cameo Parkway Records, who would become famous as president of Casablanca Records, made a deal for the rights to 96 Tears. He reissued it on Cameo with full marketing support, and the still teenaged Mysterians went out on the road.
I was only 16 and Frank was 15. Our parents were not too crazy about that.
96 Tears entered the Billboard charts at 112 in March of 1966 and began climbing. On October 1st, 1966, the band appeared on American Bandstand.
All righty. 96 Tears, gentlemen. Nice to see you. Welcome. Where's home?
Saginaw, Michigan.
Is that where you all got together?
Yes.
Was I right in saying this is the first record?
Yes, it's our first record.
On October 29th, 96 Tears reached number one. The song's success was especially meaningful for their hometowns and the Detroit area.
This really is the budding of a Detroit rock scene in a way. Because before that, there wasn't anything. There had been big singles on Fortune and big singles, obviously, in Motown by 1965. But rock and roll music didn't hit nationally until Mitch Ryder. And that was 1965. So Mitch Ryder hits, then, as I was saying, Bob Seger, 65, 66. Beneath the bare light bulb above, she
gazed into the eyes of love. And then there was 96 Tears. These bands caused a major label feeding frenzy in Detroit in the years following the song's release. Think of Seattle after Nirvana in the grunge era.
So you have, SRC on Capitol. You have Frigid Pink on London Records. You have the Stooges and the MC5 on Elektra. Now I wanna be your dog. Like, we have to pay attention to Detroit now as a rock city. It's not just Berry Gordy. It's not just Motown.
Rob St. Mary says that these Detroit rock singles reflected the city's no-nonsense attitude towards music. The rough-and-tumble simplicity of 96 Tears and how it was recorded signifies what we now call garage rock. Roberto Avant-Mir.
I want to say anywhere from 1964 to 1966 is the garage rock moment. It was this idea of stripped down music, three chords, right? Anybody could play three chords, very basic songs, basic riffs, very basic lyrics, right? It was about everybody thought they could be in a rock and roll band.
Pop critic John Perelis.
You could hear that guitar was cranked up a little too loud in the amplifier. You could hear that the electric organ had maybe a couple of keys missing. You could hear all of the defects, and that made it feel very human.
As the 60s gave way to the 70s, rock got more psychedelic and progressive, and generally more complicated and adult.
96 Tears was straightforward and honest, with the kind of DIY attitude that would soon be attached to a raw, rebellious sound coming out of England and New York.
There's a scholar, a music scholar named John Savage. This scholar said that 96 Tears is possibly or probably the first punk rock song. And when the sun comes up, I'll be on top.
You be right down there, looking up. Legs McNeil, who was the author of Please Kill Me, and he was one of the editors at Punk Magazine, said, he says it's a safe bet, it's the first garage punk song, with its piercing organ riff, bare bones vocals, and lo-fi production. Outside of the organ, that's everything you want that will come later.
It's ironic that this white Anglo sound could trace some of its roots to a bunch of Mexican kids in the Midwest. But for some Latino musicians who came after, it's a personal inspiration.
Ralph Valdez formed a Detroit area punk band in the 1970s called the Algebra Mothers, or the A-Moms.
For a lot of so-called punk or new wave bands early on, there was possibly an underlying mission to take keyboards away from the progressive rock idiom and make it seem like you could own it again as a simpler instrument, and 96 Tears kind of showed ways to do that. So for us as a band starting out, we just felt like we had to have a Vox Continental.
I'm Camilo Lara. I'm the only member of the Mexican Institute of Sound, which is my music project. It was intriguing to have that song and to hear something like that, that was kind of a punkish pop song. I was amazed that those guys were Mexicans and they were in the middle of nowhere just doing this crazy quasi-punk song that was part of the soundtrack of my childhood. Later in my life, I discovered that most of the songs on that time were less edgy and more conventional and more poppy, or at least the ones that succeed at that time. So for me, this song to be like a top 20 hit in the US was a miracle, was kind of a triumph for the underdogs.
I think the Aretha Franklin version in 1967 is outstanding, and I've been listening to that over and over and over and over.
The cover versions of 96 Tears over the decades shows that artists are still finding something to cry about.
The English punk band The Stranglers connected with the song. And there's a Texas Tornadoes version with organ and accordion.
By the time you get to the 1990s, you start to see it covered by Latin bands. It's almost like rediscovering the song as a Latin song, you know, 20, 30 years later, right? So they're singing it in Spanish now, or they change the song from 96 Tears, and it's now called 96 Lágrimas. Also, some of them sound more punky, I think, in the way that we would think punk sounds nowadays, right? The loud, fast, aggressive guitars with Spanish lyrics on top.
After 96 Tears, Question Mark and the Mysterians followed up with two singles, I Need Somebody and Can't Get Enough of You Baby. But Cameo Parkway was shut down in 1967, and the band's money and contract went down with it.
They went on to record with other labels with not much success, and the band disbanded in 1969, leaving them with the unfortunate label of One Hit Wonder. But Camilo Lara thinks applying this term to the Mysterians is an injustice.
That album, the 96 Tears, is just unbelievable. Like Upside and I Need Somebody. They have so many great songs. Don't Tease Me is fantastic. And I think saying that they are a one-hit wonder, man, is pretty unfair. I mean, it talks more about the ignorance of not knowing how amazing and important they were than them not to be successful.
Throughout the years, Question Mark and the Mysterians have reassembled the group with various members, and the original lineup got back together in the 90s.
They still appear at special events when they can. Here's guitarist Mary Cobra.
I love Bobby Valderrama. I mean, I've met the guys. They're great. They're good old Spanish guys. And for me, it's a beautiful thing, like how it matters today.
Oh, it's immensely important that they continue to play. And what a hit. I mean, what an important piece of music that they did. Not only did they stay in the area, but the song itself changed music or affected music in such a measurable way.
In August 2019, Bay City, Michigan hosted an event called 96 Tears Day with a benefit concert to aid the homeless and veterans.
There the Mysterians were, rocking out together again, with Question Mark working the stage in his fedora and trademark sunglasses.
The song survived just because it's a perfect artifact. I'm sure there is some synthesizer plug-in that can give you the exact Vox Continental sound. And I'm sure people are trying to snarl like Question Mark. But the magic of them playing that together at the time, you know, pressed at that moment, and the kind of white-hot craziness of it makes it survive.
It's very sexy garage music. It's innocent. You down there and I'll be on top, you know what I mean? And I'll cry. You can only write like that when you're a kid.
We did accomplish our goals when I was a little kid. And now I believe 96 Tears will go on forever.
That's Robert Lee Balderrama, guitarist and a founder of Question Mark and the Mysterians. 53 years ago this week, 96 Tears hit number one. Our story was produced by Pedro Rafael Rosado and Studio 360's Jocelyn Gonzalez. Special thanks to Patrick Grant and WDET in Detroit. Studio 360's American Icons is made possible by a grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities. And you can find dozens more of our American Icon stories and our long documentaries at studio360.org. Next week, we'll be spending the whole show on another American icon, The Tales of Edgar Allan Poe. We talked to a whole lot of people about Poe, and you'll recognize some of these voices. One thing we asked was the first time they encountered Poe's writing.
I didn't particularly like reading, but it was unlike anything I'd ever experienced.
I first encountered Poe as a 9-year-old. So I was reading Sweet Valley High and Black Beauty.
That was a rough time for me as a teenager.
Heavy on the girly fiction.
And I remember us all like sitting in class, just kind of closing our eyes and trying to imagine ourselves in this situation.
So it was a complete shock to my system.
I kind of like fast forwarded to the juicy part where the murder happened.
It was dark and depressing, and I'm Catholic.
And that's where I, you know, started really appreciating the story.
It suited my sense of the dark mystery of the world.
My grandfather was dying of cancer, so I was grappling with a big human problem.
There's something I really liked about being able to scare myself.
And somehow Poe seemed a way into it.
And tolerate fear and get through it. And when you're reading something frightening, you're in charge of your own fear. It's not like being the victim of a trauma where this experience is just thrust on you. You can learn to pace yourself, to put it down when it gets too much.
Part of the appeal he exerts comes from this insistence on confronting the really tough fact that everybody dies.